Hello and welcome to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. I didn't clap.
What's going on?
Clap. Let's do that again. Hello and welcome to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. This is Retro Asylum, episode 246. My name's Dean Swain and I'm joined by Mads and Chris. How you doing, guys?
Hello.
Fine, thanks.
Very well. Hello, mate.
So, how are you? You're okay? You're surviving?
I think we probably ought to tell the listeners first what you're doing presenting a Game Club episode, haven't we? Because people are going to think you've tuned into the wrong episode here.
No, of course they won't. They know I'll pop up on these once in a blue moon. Yeah.
So, guys, don't switch off. This is the Game Club.
They won't switch off. I'm on here. They're not going to switch off anyway, Chris.
We're not going to let Dean talk about the Vectrex. Don't worry. This is the...
I might give it a mention. Right, okay, so yeah, we're choosing some Taito arcade games, so I had to be involved. It's arcade games, after all, which I love.
Mm. And Dean has promised not to talk about Double Dragon all day as well, so it'll be a good one.
I'm not going to mention it. They only published the game in North America and Europe. They didn't actually program it, so it's got the elbow.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, Taito arcade games, that's what we're doing. We will be in a second getting our short list of four. We ought to say as well that Steve Erickson is also going to be involved on the main Game Club episode for the Taito month, but he's unfortunately in work today. So he's given us his games, but he can't be here to watch us eliminate one of them.
Yeah.
And don't feel too sorry for him being at work, because remember, all he does is play video games for a living.
Yeah, It's not a bad life.
Sounds wonderful.
It's not a job.
No, but this is going to be good. It's been a long time since we had a proper high score challenge at the Game Club, so I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah. It's been a long time. It's been months and months since we had a proper high score challenge.
Well, you keep playing all these dodgy RPGs and stuff, don't you?
It's me and Steve. That's only once a year.
When you play RPG, that's how much you pay attention, isn't it? We play one RPG a year. And we like mix
adventure
it up.
Games, you know, all the stuff that
we've had an arcade shoot 'em up in the last month.
Did you? What was that?
Refresh my mind. 3.
Ah, it's not an arcade game.
Oh, it is.
It's very arcadey. Very arcadey.
It is not a simulator at all.
Oh no.
So have you been, Dean? What have you been up to?
Work as usual. The only retro gaming I have been doing is basically on the Vectrex.
Okay, there he goes. Take a drink.
Take a drink. Listen to me harp on about vector graphics for another half an hour. Pytrex, which is like it's a cartridge with a Raspberry Pi attached to it for the Vectrex. It's allowing people to do flashier programs, shall we say. It uses the Raspberry Pi's processor and uses the Vectrex simply as a monitor, a display, you know. So, there's some interesting things going on with that at the moment.
Give us an example then, Dean. What are people doing with it, what the Vectrex couldn't do without it?
Well, they can run arcade games, Vector arcade games, that is. Yeah. Some of those are in development. Now, there is already something else out there called a Vec Fever, which does something similar. Mm. But the price of that, because there is only a few developed and the guy who develops it only releases a few into the community every now and then, the prices for that are ridiculous. We're talking 500 quid.
Wow.
Just for the Vec Fever itself sometimes. Mm. You can occasionally strike lucky and get them for about 300, depends. But this this piece of kit, I think I paid about 40 quid for it. It's a development version. And obviously you have to get your Raspberry Pi yourself and attach it to that. But, yeah, there's just going to be games that are faster, bigger games, you know, more memory, just a bit flashier. They still use the AY chip of the Vectrex, so the sound is going to be similar, but you can run samples on it, for example. So, yeah, it's just, you know, just the Vectrex brought up to date, so to speak.
What's the development community like around it?
Great. There's one guy in particular who's taken it in a different direction, and it's just like a front end, so to speak. So Steve would like it. So you get all your menus and stuff, and it's got pictures of arcade machines and Invectors. This is. I'll have to do a video on it.
Yeah, sounds cool.
Show you. It's pretty hard to explain, but it's being developed all the time, and it's being updated weekly. You know, so things are changing on it.
It ratchets up the desire to get one.
It does, yeah.
I think.
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, the Vectrex, even with its 28 original games, it's desirable.
Yeah,
and
I enjoyed listening to you talk about it at the Cade and Rinse special that you were on.
Yes,
it feels like before Christmas, you recorded that, didn't you?
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, but like all of those console special episodes, they do most of them. I've got system platform specials they do, but that one, first time I've listened to one that I don't already own, kind of come away from that thinking, now let me go to eBay and start watching things.
Yeah, and then wince at the prices when you
see them. They're so expensive.
They are. It's a shame that it's putting it out of reach for so many people now, but I wouldn't say it's super rare, because if you go on eBay, there's plenty on there.
Yeah, yeah.
But people just want a lot more for them now, which I think is greed. You know, I paid 50 quid for mine, and I've had two.
50 quid.
50 quid I paid for one, 45 for the other, which the other one started playing up a bit. So I had to get that fixed. Then I ended up, this one come along. It was in better shape, so I sold the other one.
Okay.
And I didn't sell it for silly money. I let it go at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
But we are going back a few years. But yeah, there's some great games on it. The homebrew scene for the Vectrex is amazing.
Yeah. Eventually I will get one.
You've got to buy it, Chris. Do it
got
now
to,
before they get... They, you know, go really, really silly.
It's an itch that I will scratch eventually. I know I will. So I might as well just get on and get one, mightn't I?
Yeah. Bite the bullet. Save up for a little while, mate, and treat yourself.
Exactly. What about you, Mads? What have you been up to? Selling stuff?
Not a lot. I have actually not sold anything yet, even though I do have plans on clearing out a bit of my PAL machines, for example, that I never use. I always use the Japanese or NTSC versions anyway.
Thinning out the collection, I think they call
exactly,
it, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. But I haven't actually gone around to that. I've been far too busy with work and the kids. So the only thing I've been up to gaming-wise is playing a bit of Wing Commander 3 with you, mate.
Yeah. And how are you getting on with that? How far are you?
I'm not that far. I'm still at the end of disc one, I think. The first of the heart missions was where I stopped, and I haven't had time since that. But I'm really loving it. It's great. I love the FMV sequences, and I love the arcadey. I was very, very surprised to see how well it actually works with a gamepad. So playing the 3DO version is actually pretty cool. Far better than I thought it would be.
You've just got to cope with the occasional 6 frames per second section
You. Every once in a blue moon,
it does chug, my. It does. But it's interesting. We'll talk about this more when we record the episode. But it's interesting to look at some of the compromises they made to get it onto the 3DO, but then also some of the things that they put into the 3DO version that they didn't put in the DOS version, which is strange and interesting in equal measures. I enjoyed it, but I'm it's probably the first time I would say ever really where I had true rose tinted spectacles on and I've had them taken off.
Yeah,
and I've never really experienced it before in that way. You know, I said when we chose Wing Commander that was sort of that was epic tier gaming for me. And yeah, I was disappointed in a lot of ways, but we can talk about that more.
So did you have a 3DO, just to go back to it, but did you have a 3DO back in the day, Chris?
Yeah, I had the
I've never owned one.
Yeah, so I had really the front loading one.
Yep.
The one, not the Gold Star one, I think it was the one that was actually manufactured by Panasonic.
Yeah.
And I bought it back from Ali last year. Well, not the one I had. I don't know. Do you know what?
That would be amazing, wouldn't it? If it was.
Check the serial number on the bottom. Yes.
So I made a note of it before I sold it.
I don't ever recall getting rid of it. I don't know what happened to it. And actually, when my mum and dad passed away a couple of years ago and I was clearing out their loft, I honestly expected to find it. You're
convinced it'd be there.
But it wasn't. And I reckon my dad sold it to buy some roll-up or buy some imported cigars from Cuba or something. Git. But yeah, it was nice. You know, it's one of those, it was a nice one to buy back because I've got tons of nostalgia for the 3DO.
Yeah.
And I still think it's an underappreciated system now. It just got PlayStationed like other systems did.
Yeah, yeah.
Got well and truly nuked. So I've been fiddling around. I actually bought a new TV a couple of weeks ago, a new 4K behemoth, and to replace our TV because I wanted to try and get into these current gen consoles. I thought I better start playing them, and I need a proper display to play
them. What size have you gone for?
So I went for a 55-inch LG. Model that was sort of 2 years old, wasn't one of the absolute premium models, around sort of early 2019, but it's failed.
Really?
Failed?
Friday night, sitting there playing Call of the Sea, which is an adventure game, Matt, on the Xbox Series X on Game Pass. Very, very good game, a bit like Myst. And a line appeared along the bottom of the screen, sort of horizontal line running from one side to the other, a black line. So I thought, that's weird. It just appeared in front of my eyes. So I kind of messed around, changed the inputs, put Netflix on, still there, picture test, still there, hard reset, and did a bit of Googling on it. And apparently it's common with the LG LCD panels, pixels fail.
Okay. Well, they'll replace that, so no worries.
Well, this is the thing. So I called up very.co.uk, which is an online retailer here in the UK, Mads, actually based in Liverpool. And they said, oh, you need to speak to LG because it's a manufacturer's issue. It's a known thing with the LCD panels. Call up LG. No, you don't have a warranty with us because with Very, they buy out the warranty. Your warranty is with Very. Back on the phone to Very. Oh, you know, you see where this
is
going.
You're going around in circles.
And so now they have acknowledged that they do warrant that it's fine. And now I've got on Monday, tomorrow, I've got to now call their supplier of their LG TVs, which is a third-party supplier, and I've got to do battle with them to get them to repair or replace it. But you know what they said? They said, oh, can you get it back to us? I said, are you joking? I said, A, I'd need a van just to put the thing in, and have you seen the size of the box? There's no way it's going back in that thing now. So, yeah, it's an absolute faff.
Stick to a CRT, Chris.
Well, you know, I've enjoyed playing on the PS5 and the Series X over the last couple of weeks. I have, you know, and this Call of the Sea is a great game. It did make me think, you know, I'm sitting here looking at my 24-inch CRT, thinking that must be, what, 30 years old now? Absolutely fine.
Still going, yeah.
You know? But hopefully it'll be sorted.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll get to the
pain. Because you know these things are not 50 quid. You know, they're a premium product. You pay a lot of money, and to have it fail after a couple of weeks is really annoying.
It's bad, isn't it? That is
really bad.
Yeah,
really bad. Anyway, let's before I start getting myself stressed and angry.
Chill out.
Let's talk about arcade games.
Yes, let's do that. So we each chose two games, and Steve chose two as well. So we've got eight games to list out here. Let's just order ourselves in like a coolness factor. So Dean goes first, and then me, and then it's Chris at the end. And then we go through the games. Is that it? Or
so rude.
I just can go into the other room to be insulted from yesterday.
Yeah, I'm an old git that's just taking the mick out of me.
Oh, that's right. You're the grandfather of retro gaming, aren't you? The newly coined term. Although there's not many grandfathers who'd have a hairdo like that, Dean.
No, it's...
Dean, let's have the first of your games.
It's an ongoing saga, isn't it?
Is it worth saying right off the bat why we haven't got Bubble Bobble on this list?
We don't have Bubble Bobble on this list because we played that before.
We used that
as a filler at some point when we were playing some other game. So we've done a high school challenge on Bubble Bobble before, so we didn't want to do that again.
Exactly. You can imagine people screaming at the whatever they listen to us on. Why? Where's Bubble Bobble?
So, but there is something coming, Chris. There is something coming. So don't worry. Yes.
Go on then, Dean. Fire away.
Okay, my first game then is Zookeeper, which is a 1983 release by Taito of America. A single-screen arcade game. Basically, you run around in a rectangle, and there's animals inside the rectangle. And as you run around, you're placing bricks around the rectangle. And the animals are bouncing in the rectangle, and each time they hit a brick, it's being eaten away and they're trying to escape. So the idea is to keep the animals in the rectangle. So why it's called Zookeeper, obviously you're trying to keep the animals in, but he's more of a bricklayer, isn't he? I've always found it a bit strange. It should have been something to do with a bricklayer. But yeah, it's a high score game, really. You do this level where you're running around. I think you get three of those. Then you get a bonus stage where it's a platform game, which is heavily influenced by Donkey Kong. Moving platforms, and you've got to get up and save your girlfriend while there's bouncing rocks and other things happening. And then you play a few more of the first stage, the rectangle running around, trying to keep these animals locked in their cage. And then you come to another screen where there's two escalators and there's a cage of animals and they're escaping, running around. You've got to jump over them, get up the escalators and get to your girlfriend again. And then it repeats. So there's a bit of variety there. It's a fun game to play. It's a bit awkward to control at times. As you go around a rectangle, the controls change. So when you're at the top, you can go left or right. When you get to the sides, you still press. Say you're running from left, from right to left. As you go down, it's still left on the controller, and then suddenly it changes to down. Yeah, so you've got to.
Okay.
Yes, it's a bit strange. But once you get used to that mechanic, it's a really fun game. And jumping over each animal, you get a score. So the more animals you jump over, you can get bigger scores. You've got it looks like a frying pan that you collect, but it's not. It's I think it's a bricklayer's tool for the cement. I think that's what it's meant to be anyway. And you can then hit the animals and that throws them back into the cage, so you get points for that as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. I thought it was a frying pan as well.
Yeah, it looks like a frying pan. Basically, you're going against the timer, so you've got to keep running around, avoiding the animals, but try and keep them trapped in the rectangle. And once the timer gets down to the bottom, you move on to the next level. So, as usual, I've probably not described it too well, but trust me, give it a try. It's a really fun game.
So do you know what the girl is called, actually, Dean?
I can't remember off the top of my head with that.
This is a Zelda game. The girl is called Zelda. So
that's right. Yes, you're right. Zelda.
Is it really?
Yeah. So you are Seek the Zookeeper, and your girlfriend is called Zelda. So we need to rescue Zelda.
That's where Nintendo got the name from. That's Zelda, though.
No, probably not that Zelda.
No.
That's a good choice.
Yeah, it does sound good.
I think... You know, this is a great game for high scores. It's not a game that everyone's familiar with. Nope. It's available on, I think it's the Taito Legends 2 pack. So people can play it at home without resorting to MAME, or if you want to go on MAME, it's perfectly playable on that, providing you get the right ROM, because Mads mentioned just before we started recording, there is a ROM which asks you for your location, and I put this on my arcade cab, and I couldn't progress further than that screen. So you have to find the right ROM, but yeah, very playable game. I used to have it in a newsagent's near to where I lived. That's where I first played it, and I only saw it there, and I didn't play it for years after, but discovered it again a few years back, and I play it quite regularly. Not that I'm very good at it, but
you should be good at it.
I should be, but
I've never played it. I've heard of it. Retro Gamer did a feature on it. One of the old retro gamers that I was reading recently had a feature, you know, a making of interview with the developer, etc. And I remember looking, thinking then it seemed like it'd be right up my street, proper, pure high score arcade game, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no continues on this. You know, it's one credit.
Yeah, and see how far you get.
That's the thing. I think if the stage I was trying to describe with the escalators, if you complete that, you get another credit, or at least you get three extra lives.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Or an extra life. There's, yeah.
If I remember what I love about these arcade games is, but over the course of a month, there's always someone in the group that turns out to be really, really good at it. And, you know, starts to uncover all of these things.
Than I am. I'm an old man now. I can't keep up with the response times.
It's on Taito Legends, the first one. So
the first one is
definitely
it?
Available. Yep. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Great choice. Chris, you want to go with one of yours?
Yeah, I'll go with one of mine. So let's start with Rastan. So Rastan developed and published by Taito. Taito? What did we decide on, Mads? Taito.
Yep.
In 1987, hack and slash platformer, would you say?
Yep.
It's not really scrolling beat 'em up, is it? It's sort of in the vein of Strider kind of game. Level based, six stages.
Great soundtrack.
Yes.
Classic. You know, he's on a good old fashioned barbarian. It's fair to say that the character model isn't anything which you'd see walking down your local high street. He's basically got nothing on with a massive sword, and he goes from left to right, jumping over platforms and killing enemies. I've actually never played this. I've managed to go through my whole life. It was
really?
Ported. Never.
Really?
Okay. Never.
God, Chris.
It was ported to pretty much everything, wasn't it? Everything 8-bit, anyway.
Yeah, Master System.
And I've managed to go through my life and never, ever played it. And everyone talks about Rastan as being one of those things, one of those games which, you know, if people talk about Taito arcade games, Rastan always comes up.
Yeah.
Was it released?
This is one I used to play at the local chippy, and it was beautiful. Chippy. Great game.
So they have chippies in Denmark?
We do.
Cool. Yeah. Did it get a release recently on the Switch? I've got something in my head that it came out on.
Recently, the past year or two, somebody's been working on an Amiga port. I'm not sure whether they finished it.
Okay, maybe that's where I've seen it then on Indie Retro News.
Yeah, I'm sure at the time this was advertised for the Amiga and ST, but...
Yeah, never released.
At the time, Imagine Software, Stroke Ocean, they didn't always do 16-bit versions of the arcade games they were releasing.
Mm.
Who ported it then, Dean? Who developed the ports?
Blimey. Although it was published via Ocean, stroke Imagine, I'm trying to think. I'm sure it was an Irish developer. I can't remember their name off the top of my head.
Yeah.
At least for the Spectrum and Amstrad versions, I think the C64 version might have been developed in-house at Ocean.
It also had an MSX2 port, so guaranteed that's probably the best.
Probably, yeah.
Being a Japanese game.
Yeah, yeah, being developed in Japan.
But it certainly looks interesting. It's probably less of a pure high score arcade challenge, although, like all of these games, it will have a score counter and we will be able to track scores. It probably is more one similar to Strider,
Yeah.
Where we, it was a more of a challenge to see just how
it's far a very tough game as well.
Yeah.
Offlines, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Japanese arcade game, tough. I don't believe you. But yeah, Rastan is my first choice.
Yeah, great choice, mate.
Cool.
Great choice. So my first choice is actually inspired by Chris, because Chris was talking about picking Qix. So QIX. And I loved playing that back in the day, but I was having a look at the updated version called Super Qix instead, because it seemed as a better fit for a high score challenge. There are multiple ways of raking in a big score there. So I ended up choosing Super Qix, and it's published by Taito, but it's actually developed by a small Japanese development house that was called Kaneko. But it's still it's a Taito series, isn't it? Taito started Qix first, and then asked this little development house to do this the super version that was released in 87. So for people who don't know Qix, how do you describe this? Each level, you have a square. You start out with a square, and there's some enemies moving inside the square, and you have to color in the entire square. Well, some percentage of the square. Like for example, the first level, you have to color in 75%, I think. And you do that by leaving the safety of the outer edges, right? So you are just a small pointer running around on the edges. There are monsters on the edges as well that you need to avoid. They come across from both sides, actually. So you move into the uncertain areas. And if the monsters inside the square touch any of the lines that you're currently drawing inside the big square, you'll die. But you need to go out from the edge and then go back to the edge somewhere else. And then that area that you've encompassed here will be colored in, and then you slowly color in the entire screen. So I loved playing these games. There are lots of variants of them back in the day. I remember Qix. I very fondly remember the versions called Gal's Panic for other reasons, but we had those in the local JP as well. If you don't know those, you should definitely check them out on YouTube. But great gameplay, and this could be really good fun for a high school challenge. Super Qix has many ways of getting the highest scores. There are letters you need to pick up by encircling them in the area you're calling in right now, and there are lots of other stuff that gives you extra bonuses. And of course, if you like living dangerously, you try to color in a very large area at the same time, and that will give you a score multiplier. But there's a big risk of being caught, of course. So, yeah, great game, and it could be fun for a high school challenge.
The best arcade games have a really inbaked risk and reward mechanic, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, indeed.
Yeah, I was just reading about the original Qix, and it was whenever it says maddeningly addictive. I think to myself, oh yeah, that's a game club game.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I thought this was controlled with a trackball, but it's not, is it? It's a joystick.
No, I've only ever played it on a regular controller, but there's no buttons involved. You just use the stick.
Yeah.
It's a four-way.
I might be thinking of a different game.
It's a four-way, yeah. Four-way is stick. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this, I'm sure this could be great fun for a high school challenge. So,
is it on any of the compilations?
Yes, it's actually, if I recall correctly, on Taito Legends 2. Let me just check here. Yes, it's on the Taito Legends 1.
Yeah. Rastan is 2, by the way. We didn't mention that.
Yes,
Rastan
true.
Is 2.
So Zookeeper, Rastan, and the first three games here are all on Taito Legends, the first.
I love the idea of Super Qix. Do you know what, Dean? When I was playing Taivarin on the Spectrum Next, one of the Rusty Pixels initial games, I know it's a very different game, but it really reminded me of Qix and the Qix
Club. It's
got
that similar sort of presentation, I guess.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, I wonder whether it was Taivarin was inspired by Qix.
Yeah, I think it was, and the few Williams arcade games, you know, it's got that look and feel to it as well.
Yeah. Good choice, Mads. Really good choice.
Yeah, cool.
Should we pick off one of Steve's?
Yeah, let's have one of Steve's as well. So, Steve, let's go with the New Zealand story.
God.
So everybody probably knows the New Zealand story, don't they? Also published and developed by Taito. It's from 1988. Yet another game that I loved playing at the Chippy. It's a platformer, just a classic platformer, but with a twist. I mean, all of these warp gates, so you can figure out how to get through the game in no time, are quite interesting. Probably not good for a high school challenge.
It looks so cute, doesn't it? But it's not a cute game, really.
No, it's not.
It's hard.
It's quite hard. And one hit and you're dead. So it's you need to be careful. And it's fun. It's got all these different weapons you can pick up, like the laser gun, and you start with the arrow, and you get the bombs, and all of those weapons can be used in different ways. I would always actually try to avoid the bombs, though. But it's a great game, and your little bird can't actually fly, but you can jump onto balloons and fly like that, and you have a boss fight every what, four or five levels.
Soundtrack as well.
Oh yes, oh yes. Yeah, you'd always hear this from the other end of the arcade.
Hidden secrets.
Yep.
Great game.
Yeah,
great game.
Yeah.
High score challenge. Not sure actually. It'll be interesting to see, but the Strider. Yeah. I guess it could be done.
Yeah. It's so hard. You know,
it's a big game as well, isn't it?
Yeah, massive.
Yeah.
It will be very interesting, actually, to see if anybody could get to the end of it, because it's notoriously, nightmarishly difficult.
That's the trouble. With a lot of arcade games towards the late 80s, they, you know, once credits were introduced, it seemed to me they just made them too hard that they couldn't be completed on one credit. I mean, I could be wrong, you know. I'm no expert in the New Zealand story at all. Maybe it can be done.
I remember playing this a lot, and you have these different worlds that you go through. Every world is four or five. I think it's four stages, and then you have a boss fight. I would always be able to get to the third world, and then I never advanced from that because it just got really, really hard. You had to put in lots of credits to go further than that. But the first two boss fights are definitely doable without getting hit at all. So,
yeah, I've got far more fondness for the Amiga port, which is what I played a lot of. I got the it was one of my packing games when I got my initial Amiga.
Yeah, okay.
It's definitely, when I think of New Zealand Story, I don't think of it as an arcade game, although I know that's where it starts. I think of it as an Amiga game.
Yeah, I did play it a lot on the Amiga as well.
Yeah, it was a pretty good conversion, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Great. It was.
Yeah, really good. Yeah, and it was a bit easier as well.
Yeah.
So you could actually
Remember the cheat mode for it?
Yeah.
I ain't going to repeat it. But
well, there was one Fluffy Kiwis, wasn't there?
Yeah, and there was another one.
Was there a rude one?
There was a rude one, yes, which they only done because they thought the magazines wouldn't print it, but they did.
Salacious magazines. Yeah. Oh, good choice, Steve. Good choice.
Yeah,
So back to you then, Dean.
Right, okay. Now, there's so many Taito arcade games that I could have chose, but I've chosen one that I'm pretty good at, and that is Chase HQ, which... Obviously, it came after, after OutRun. It uses that same 3D scaling sprite technology. Does it better it? Not really, no, because OutRun's pretty much perfect in my eyes. But it introduces a slightly different gameplay. Instead of racing, you've got to catch up to a bad guy and repeatedly ram into him to try and stop him, ram him off the road. And I thought it was a great twist on the OutRun gameplay. There's five stages. It can be done in about 20 minutes. It is tough. It gets really tough on the third level, I find. That's where, you know, I can get onto the first two, and then from level three onwards, it does get tough. I can usually make it up to the fifth one. I have completed it in the past, but yeah, it's a tough cookie. But it's got that iconic speech, you know, Nancy at Chase headquarters, and
baby.
That's it. Let's go, Mr. Driver.
Let's go, Mr. Driver.
Yeah, it plays on the Crockett and Tubbs thing, Miami Vice. It's a classic. It's up there with OutRun. In my eyes, I know a lot of people will disagree, but I think it's a really playable game.
It's a Japanese-made game, Dean.
It is, yeah.
One question I've got:
go on.
Can you play it without a? Can you play it effectively without the steering wheel?
Yeah, you can. It plays pretty well without a steering wheel.
Does it?
Yeah, it's definitely playable. I've completed it with just a joystick. I've now got a spinner on my arcade machine, which I use as a steering wheel.
Right.
So I can play it that way. But yeah, it's still perfectly playable with a joystick. Obviously, you know, any driving game usually feels better with a steering wheel. But
I must say, it's always put me off playing the likes of Outrun and Chase HQ through Maine.
Yeah, it's not the same, is it? It's, you know, it, given the choice, I'd rather play the Chase HQ cab.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know, that's a problem that the conversions had, as good as they were on most systems, apart from the C64. You know, you didn't have a steering wheel. But, yeah, still a great game.
Yeah, but at least in the porting, though, they can design it for use with a joystick rather than trying to shoehorn an arcade controller into what really must be.
What I will say is, you know, if this doesn't win, which it probably won't, please do give it a try on a joystick and see what you think. I think it plays pretty well. There's some driving games like Pole Position that you cannot play with a joystick.
Yeah.
But Chase HQ and Outrun, really, they both work pretty well, considering.
So I remember playing this back in the day on this stand-up cabinet with the steering wheel. Was there ever a sit-down version of Chase HQ?
There was, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it didn't have any hydraulics or anything. It was, you know, pretty standard. Hmm. But, yeah, there was definitely a sit-down cab.
Okay, yeah.
You used to have the speakers behind you.
It's a great game. I'm not very good at driving games. I'm sure I never got to the third stage, but I remember getting through the first one at least.
Yeah. Again, this is an Amiga game for me, first and foremost.
But it's rubbish on the Amiga.
I love it on pulse. The Amiga. It's not as bad as the C64 version.
It's not much better, though, Chris.
So enough trash talking of the C64.
Oh. Mads, it's legendary bad, though, isn't it? You know,
you're right.
It could have been so much better. It just, you know, with a lot of the home conversions, it really did depend who you got to convert the game. If the programmers knew that machine well and how much time they would give.
Who did it then, Dean? Can you remember who did the C64 and Amiga ports?
It was Tech Software.
Oh, right. Doesn't inspire confidence, does it?
Well, they've done some... They mainly worked for Grand Slam, and then they ended up doing a few things for Ocean. Strangely enough, they didn't develop the Amstrad and Spectrum versions, which were the best versions other than PC Engine.
Yeah.
Which, even that, I don't really rate. Have you played it on the PC Engine?
No.
It's very jerky.
Is it?
When the roads bend, yeah.
Which is ridiculous, given how well the PC Engine runs the Outrun port.
Yes. Our Outrun on the PC Engine's really, really good.
It's fabulous.
Yeah.
So the PC Engine can do it. It's obviously just badly
coded.
Yeah,
it's just a case of coding.
Mm. One of the funniest things I've ever seen on YouTube is Chris O'Regan retro when he used to do the Retro Asylum videos on a Sunday evening, playing Chase HQ on the Amstrad CPC and getting so frustrated because he didn't realise you could change from low to high gear.
So many people make that mistake, and even in the arcade, I remember people, you know, they'll either forget what gear they're in or not use the gears at all. And the thing with Chase HQ is, and I'm sure there is a video on YouTube of me playing it, and I explain that you can use the high and low gears as a turbo as well as the turbo boosts.
Okay.
You change into low quickly and pull back into high, and it gives you a bit of a kick. Not as much as the actual turbo, but you can do that. There is a method to it.
Yeah. A part of me thinks it'd be a really interesting one to play. I am just a little worried about the controls. But we can come on to that when we...
I understand that. It's then again, same as one of your choices.
Yeah, we'll come on to that. Mm. Yeah. Although I think there is an acceptable workaround, but we will come on to that in a sec.
Yeah.
This is Nancy at Chase headquarters. We have an emergency here. Carlos, the New York armed robber, has been seen listening to Retro Asylum without leaving a review on iTunes. Over.
Leave it to us, Nancy, baby. Let's go, Mr. Driver.
If you really enjoy the Retro Asylum podcast show, then please leave us a review on iTunes.
So that was Dean's second game, and Chris, what's yours then?
Okay, so... Just going back to what Dean was talking about with control issues, my second game is Arkanoid.
Oh, yeah.
Great game. The absolute classic
Arkanoid. One of my favourite arcade games ever, I would say. Probably one that I have played or a variant of Arkanoid on every single platform that I own. And I would say is probably a clone of Arkanoid, which even makes me want to buy an Intellivision Amico because I quite like the look of their Breakout game.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, Arkanoid was a clone of Breakout anyway.
It was, of course it was, which was in itself a clone, a mixture of Pong and Space Invaders, wasn't it? So, yeah, any bat and ball game, I'm a bit of a sucker for. But Arkanoid just varies it up just enough just to keep it interesting with the power-ups and the level design and it's very, very difficult. It's a very difficult game. It's
very hard.
But the difficulty curve is fair, I feel. You know, it does ramp up, but it ramps up evenly, I find. And you do get better at it. It is a game where practice absolutely can make perfect.
So how do you prefer playing this? Because, of course, you need a spinner to play it correctly.
Ideally. But the mouse.
How do you prefer playing it? Would you use a mouse or a joystick?
Yeah. I used to play it on
the Amiga with the mouse, and that worked, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. The Amiga port is, again, it's definitely the version I've played the most of over the years. And I got so used to playing it with the mouse that actually now going back to the arcade version through MAME and setting it up so your mouse acts as your spinner, I think works really, really well. And I think you can get a reasonably authentic experience because the mouse can, you know, you've got something in your hand, it can feel like the spinner. I mean, there's no replacement for playing these things in the most authentic way, of course. But I do feel like I think the difference with a driving game is it is feels like a proper fudge if you're playing it with the joystick. Whereas you playing something like, what's that game with the missiles? Missile Command. Playing something like Missile Command or Arkanoid with a mouse rather than a trackball or a spinner actually still has that tactile feeling. So I do think you can get a really decent game of Arkanoid with a mouse. And I think it would be a great high score challenge playing through an absolutely classic game.
Great.
One thing you might be able to answer this, Dean. It was never officially published in Europe, the arcade version. Never distributed.
I definitely saw it over here. I played it in the arcade. I don't know, because this is the thing. In Europe, or the UK at least, it was very rare we got dedicated cabs. We did with some of the earlier games, and Arkanoid, I don't remember playing it on a dedicated cab. The one I used to play, because it was in a working man's club, it had like chipboard on the side, you know? It didn't have any Tato art on it or anything.
And but it had a spinner?
It had a spinner, yeah. Oh, you had to play it with a spinner. I didn't play this with a joystick until I got a MAME cab. And I ended up, that's the reason I bought a spinner was because of Arkanoid.
And I've set it
all up and it plays perfectly now.
So I remember playing it in this cab with a huge spinner that seemed to be weighted. So it had a bit of resistance in it spinning it around. It was really, really great.
That is nice.
And it's got the spinner and a single button. That's it, right? Because you can pick up the lasers and shoot ahead. So you need that single button, but that's
it. You know, Fang, with Arkanoid, don't be greedy. Don't try and get the power up unless you're right next to it, because otherwise you're going to pay the price. It's a cunning game.
And like the best arcade games, right? You know, it's so simple. It's just so simple.
Yeah, obviously, you know, it's using the Breakout formula, but it does with those power-ups coming down. You got your laser, you got multi-ball and all the different things. I'll get confused out because I play Revenge of Doe quite a bit as well, so I can't remember what power-ups on what, but they're both great games. And
I think in the first one you only get like the slowdown, you get the one that makes your ship or whatever you want to call it a bit larger.
Yeah,
and you get the one that makes you grab the ball, so you can you shoot it at the angle grab it at, and then the lasers.
On Revenge of Doe, you get that like where your ship blurs as well. You kind of the balls can hit the blur.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that one.
I think, like Dean says, I think the power ups do merge into one, and I think some of the ports actually had some of the power ups from the second arcade game as well.
Okay,
applied to the first Arkanoid game. Yeah. So. Is a little bit difficult to to get it right. But either way, the fundamental game is it's a bat and ball game to knock out the blocks, isn't it? And
that's, but it's got those iconic sounds.
Yeah, so good.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it is so good. So yeah, that's my second choice.
Good choice. So my second choice, so we mentioned that we wouldn't be including Bubble Bobble because we played that before, but I cheated. So I've included Bubble Bobble 3, the one that's actually called Bubble Memories. So it, and many people think that Rainbow Islands is Bubble Bobble 2 and then Parasol Stars is Bubble Bobble 3. And that's true. They are Bubble Bobble 2 and 3, but there are in the arcade released Bubble Bobble 2 and 3 as well that are Bubble Symphony and Bubble Memories. And those are both great games that just follow along in the same footsteps as Bubble Bobble. You still control your little Bub and Bob, the Bubble Dragons, and they just have small tweaks to the gameplay. For example, I had both Bubble Symphony and Bubble Memories as arcade boards back when I had arcade machines, and I played a lot of them. And Bubble Memories is, for my money, the best version of Bubble Bobble. This is heresy, but I would say it's even better than the first one. They have made an even more interesting game. So it's pretty much still just Bubble Bobble, but you've got boss fights every 10 level now instead of only one boss at the level 100. There's the addition of, if you ever finish the first Bubble Bobble game, you know that in level 100, you can pick up this little flask that makes your bubbles into lightning bubbles, for example. So if I recall correctly, you can do this in different stages here in Bubble Memories as well. So you can get lightning and then other like power-ups within your bubbles. That makes for a more interesting gameplay. And you can do these super bubbles as well, charged shots, where you can, I think you hold down the button for 3-4 seconds, and then you release one huge bubble that can capture many monsters inside at one time, or one huge monster inside it. And, lots and lots of little gameplay tweaks that just makes this an even more enjoyable Bubble Bobble experience. It's a later game, of course. It's from 1996, but still a great game to play. And it's on the Taito Legends 2 collection, I think, as well. Maybe it's the first one. I'll have to check that. But a great game. And I love Bubble Bobble. And for the longest time, I searched for the arcade board of the first game because I thought I needed that. But I actually wound up just being happy playing Bubble Memories and Bubble Symphony instead. So Bubble Memories, great game.
I've not played it.
No.
Really?
And I really want to now.
Yeah, you need to. It's just more of a good thing and then tweaked in little ways that to make it even more interesting.
Yeah.
If you play the first one, you'll find that especially playing Bubble Bobble in single player mode, there are some levels later on that are extremely unfair. I mean, they're meant to kill you, and you need to be an expert to actually get through those. And I find that Bubble Memories is better, has better level design in that regard, for example.
Yeah, with it being such a late game, I've never really taken any notice of it because, as you said, it was Bubble Bobble, Rainbow Islands, and then Parasol Stars. You know, it's how I saw the trilogy. So I suppose with it being a later game, you know, I was into clubbing and girls at that time, so it got ignored, and I've never looked at it, so I'm intrigued now. The trouble I find with Bubble Bobble is that as a single-player experience, I get bored. You know, it's a great two-player game, but I always got bored, whereas with Rainbow Islands, it's a single-player game anyway, and I did love the gameplay on that, despite, again, it's a very hard game. But
I'm useless at Bubble Bobble.
Really? Yeah.
I want to love it. And
me and my boy were playing it last night, and I was trying to explain to him, you know, you can jump on the bubbles by holding jump down, and that's what makes it easier. Once you've got that, I think. Yeah.
I'm reasonably okay at getting through the levels, but when we did play the original Bubble Bobble last year for a brief high score challenge, I just could never really get my head around the scoring mechanics. They're so esoteric, how you build up scores and how you get certain power-ups to appear.
Well, I used to find, and I might be wrong, but if you didn't burst the bubbles with the bad guys in for a little while, then you'd get a big bonus drop down.
Yeah.
You need to burst as many bubbles with bad guys in them at the same time, because if you burst one, it's 1,000 points, and so then you double it up.
You're better off
so
letting them linger
4,
for a little while before you know, it becomes dangerous and they're about to pop and get out again.
Yeah, that's one way to rig up a high score, but there are lots of details in that. Chris said, there are counters inside the game of the first Bubble Bobble. So if you go from left to right entirely from left-hand side to right-hand side, maybe 10 times, then that will increase the possibility of this power-up getting, revealing itself in this level and so on and so forth. So there's lots going on behind the scenes here.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the bit that frustrates me about it, is that they keep all of this thing, all of these things, and hidden in a bushel. Yeah, and I would rather the game was a little bit more explicit about what you needed to do to make some of these things happen.
Yep.
Mads, does this game use the bubble theme, the music?
It does, an updated version of it.
Yeah.
As I recall it, at least. It's been a while since I played it.
It's so catchy, that music.
Mm.
It is catchy, but it's on a 7-second loop.
Is it a 7-second loop?
Something like that.
Nah.
Great. I love it.
I think we need to pick this just because Chris says he's bad at it.
We'll come back to that.
Speaking of bubble, the last game that Steve chose as well was in the bubble family, at least. That's Bust a Move. Another game I played a lot. It's from 1994, so it's kind of a recent title as well. Yeah. Everybody knows Bust a Move, don't they? How do you describe it? You control like a little cannon that shoots colored bubbles, and you need to match four, I think it is, to make if you shoot up in this you have a square with lots and lots of bubbles in it, and if you shoot a red one on three other red ones, they will disappear, and that's the game really. And then the ceiling goes down towards you all the time, so you need to clear the level before you get crushed by the bubbles. Really, this is a great two-player game, by the way. You shoot, if you shoot multiple bubbles down, like if you shoot off like a branch and lots of bubbles fall down, then they'll be sent over to your opponent's playfield instead. I used to play this a lot with my wife, and I would mostly win, and she'd be very angry with me. It was great times.
Yeah, it's Candy Crush, isn't it? I think that's how you.
I've never played Candy Crush because I'm not a millennial, mate.
You're not a millennial, nor are you a middle-aged woman.
I've never played this either.
Really?
Yeah, I remember seeing it when I was on holiday, probably out in Spain or Cyprus somewhere. And I thought, oh, it's bubble. But to me, it was just getting on the Tetris and columns craze, you know, it's that sort of thing. Again, it's a game I should give a try. At least.
It's a very, very addictive game, and there are lots of tactics there. There's more depth than you think in this game. I mean, for example, you're not just supposed to clear the screen by hitting bubbles at bubbles of the same color. There are lots of stuff to do there. Like I said, you can shoot off branches so that bubbles hanging under them will fall down. That's a better way to rake up a higher score, and you get multipliers. And there's lots more to it than meets the eye. But for me, it's actually first and foremost a two-player game. It's not much fun as a single-player game. I mean, I've played it a lot as single-player as well, because I had this for my arcade machines as well. I had the Neo Geo. Actually, I had Puzzle Bubble as a Neo Geo MVS cart, but I also had Puzzle Bubble 2 and Puzzle Bubble 4 as boards, actually. So I played a lot of Puzzle Bubble. And the single-player stuff is okay. They're more of a puzzle, because where it's very action orientated when you're in two player mode, then you have these bespoke built levels in one player mode, and often they can be done in three shots if you do it right, but it's hard to do it right. And while that is good fun, I struggle to see that as something we do as a high school challenge, because depends. It's a two player game for me.
So it's a great game, but not so much in single player.
Nah. I think that would be boring. I'm actually right now struggling to remember if there was like a score attack mode. I'm not sure if the first one had that, but I'm pretty sure that Puzzle Bubble 4 has that.
I'm not sure. I can't remember. This is a PlayStation 1 game for me, but I actually don't think it was ever ported to the PS1. It must have been one of the sequels.
I'm sure it was, wasn't it?
I'm sure I played this. I had this on the PlayStation 1 as well, Chris.
I thought it was. But looking down, I'm looking at the fandom page for Puzzle Bobble on the Bubble Bobble fandom wiki, and it lists the ports, and it doesn't list the PS1, which, maybe
weird.
It was one of the sequels that was ported as.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't know. But anyway, this is available. The Neo Geo MVS version is available on last gen consoles, including the Switch.
Yeah,
I'm thinking of this, the original Bubble Bubble and Rainbow Islands was released on the PlayStation.
Yeah. That's actually quite hard to get your hands on these days.
Yeah. So if anyone wants it, you've got to offer me a lot of money.
It's pretty much arcade perfect, that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but I love this game, and it's obviously spawned many, many, many clones and copycats, including Candy Crush, which is one of the most played video games in the world. But my concern is that if we're going for a pure high score challenge, then perhaps it isn't the best, but it's probably better for that, arguably, than Steve's other choice, which is New Zealand Story. So I'm not sure where we go with this one.
I really like New Zealand Story.
I think that's a good game.
Okay, well, should we start with Steve then? Because we need to agree to knock out one of Steve's games.
Yeah, let's just sum up here. We've got Rust Done, Chase Headquarters, so Chase HQ, Super Kicks, Bubble Memories, The New Zealand Story, Bust a Move, Arkanoid, and Zookeeper. So lots of good games there. It's going to be hard to whittle down this list. But you're right, let's start with Steve, because we all three need to agree on which of his games we want to remove.
Yeah. Go on then. Who wants to make a pitch for a particular game?
Well, for me, the best of the two games, the better of the two games, is definitely New Zealand Story, because Puzzle Bubble is a two-player game, in my mind at least. So I'd go with New Zealand Story simply because I love it so much, and I can hum the theme tune right now. And I still know by heart, even though I haven't played it in years, where 10 of the warp pipes are, so you can go to different secret zones or skip parts of the game. So I'd love to get back into that.
Dean, how about you, Dean? Other views?
I've got to agree. New Zealand Story all the way.
Yeah.
The better game.
I think I agree. The other one. I don't think either of Steve's games are ideal, really, for a proper high score challenge. But I do agree that New Zealand Story will give us more longevity over the course of the month if that's what gets picked.
Yep. So bye-bye, Puzzle Bubble or Bust a Move, whatever you want to call it. Okay. So should we, Dean, should we take away one of Chris's games? So Chris had Rustan and Arkanoid. And Arkanoid, yeah.
I think for high scores, Rustan's got to go out the window. I love the game. I love the soundtrack of it. But I think high score-wise, Arkanoid's the way to go.
Rustan is one of those games I've been wanting to play again for years, because I played it at the local Chibi back in the day and I really loved it, but it was tough as nails.
It is tough.
Yeah, but I'd love to get into that again at some point. And we really had fun playing Strider that month. Arkanoid, if you say, Chris, that it actually works well with a mouse, because I don't have a spinner and I really don't like playing Arkanoid with a joystick.
You can play it with a joystick, but you have to mess up. I can post the instructions on how to play it with a joystick in MAME, yeah.
Yeah, you can, but why would you want to? Because unless you're playing on a laptop, why would you want to play it with a joystick? Mm. The mouse, for me, works. It can never replace the spinner, but to give you that tactile feeling of having something in your hand, I think it works really well.
I'd like to try that. So I'm gonna go with Arkanoid as well then, you, Dean. So let's keep Arkanoid in there.
Good choice. I don't think we could have had Rastan and New Zealand Story. So that, I think that's...
Well, that's true there, yeah.
Yeah, Arkanoid's a good choice.
So Dean, you guys pick one of mine off then.
What do you think?
I don't know. Let's have a look.
Remind me of your games, Mads.
So I have Super Kicks and Bubble Memories. So
this is tough. Yours is probably the toughest.
I think they'll both be great for a high score challenge.
Exactly. Mm. Can I make my case first, Dean?
Go for it.
I'm rubbish at Bubble Bobble. So why would you want to inflict that upon me?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah,
I think, look, there is incredible depth in the Bubble Bobble games. And assuming that Bubble Bobble Memories, Bubble Memories, Matt, it is Bubble Memories, not Bubble Symphony.
Bubble Memories, yeah.
Yeah. So assuming that Bubble Memories is the same kind of scoring system and power-up system as the original one, there's going to be a lot of stuff to have to work out or potentially look at a wiki guide. And for me, that just feels a little cheap, as I said earlier. I'm rubbish at it. I know I won't be anywhere near the high school list. So, and Kix, yeah, that arcadey puzzle game. Yeah, everything's a puzzle game, of course, but that is a genuine, explicit puzzle game. And I think, yeah, maybe fewer people have played the Kix series than have played the Bubble Bobble series. So it might be nice to shine a spotlight on Kix.
Yeah. I'm going to go the same, purely because you've already done Bubble Bobble. And this one, it plays very similar, doesn't it?
Yes,
I will try it, though. I do want to give it a try. So I'll be playing that as well.
It is a great game. It's actually not a game I played back in the day, Bubble Memories. I only played it years later when I got it at the arcade board myself because I love Bubble Bobbles. I thought, the original Bubble Bobble is too expensive. I'll buy this one instead. And I found out that it was actually really, really good.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, we'll go Kix.
Kix. Nice. Cool. Yeah.
So, Chris, you and I, we need to pick off either Chase HQ or Zookeeper. And for me, that's actually easy.
Yeah,
I think
Zookeeper really, really intrigues
me.
While I do love Chase HQ, it's the same as, now we actually did include Arkanoid, even though we don't have the right control scheme for that. We don't have the right control scheme for Chase HQ as well. And
I think with Zookeeper, it's more of a higher score challenge, which suits what we're doing here. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it looks really interesting, and it's a game I've never really played, so I'd really like to try that.
Again, looking at it, I've never played it, but looking at the screenshots and videos, it recalls to mind, and it's just nothing like it, but it just recalls to mind Popeye. And, you know, I get the Popeye vibes to it.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
It's also got the sound effects on it. Again, I'm always harping on about Williams arcade games because of the sounds, and this reminds me of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the right choice. And again, Chase HQ is a very famous game, which I'm sure, look, all of these games to some extent are famous games, of course they are, but Chase HQ is a game that gets a lot of chat a lot of the time.
A lot of people will have already played it, whereas I think with Zookeeper, it'll be new for a lot of people.
Yeah. So, Mads, we agreed?
We agreed, yeah. Yeah.
So what have we got? It's a hard choice.
Yeah, so we got four great games here. Super Kix that you should vote for, and the New Zealand Story, Arkanoid, and Zookeeper as well. That'll be great.
Yeah. Good. Should be a good month.
Yeah, I'd love to play any one of these. So let's just pick our personal favorites here. For me, it would be Super Kix, Zookeeper, Arkanoid, and then New Zealand Story. That's the ones I would choose. How about you guys? In that order, of course.
I've got to say, for my game, Zookeeper all the way. I think, guys, you know, if you've not played it, give it, even if it doesn't win, please do give it a try. I think you'll really enjoy it. What else was there? After that, I'd go Arkanoid. That's a real favourite of mine. Yeah. I've not played Kix. I'm going to put that to the back of the list. And what's the third game?
New Zealand Story. See, the grandfather of retro gaming here. I mean, it's...
Yeah, well, I'm losing it because I'm so old.
So for me, I mean, you could barely get a cigarette paper between Arkanoid, Super Kix, and now I've done it. Arkanoid, Super Kix, and Zookeeper.
Yeah.
And Zookeeper. But I've got to stick with my own game, and I absolutely love Arkanoid, and I might have a chance of getting a decent score, Arkanoid. And then purely because I've never played it or never played anything like it, and it looks pretty unique, Zookeeper, very close third, Super Kix.
I'll tell you something, Zookeeper, the controls on it will work so well, just the normal joypad.
Exactly.
I think, you know, for that reason alone, it should win.
There you go. That's Dean's case because you can use a joystick. Job done.
Yes.
And then New Zealand Story.
But Super Kix should, of course, win because it's a great game and because then we can dive into the whole Gals Panic series afterwards.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. God. Do a cover for that, can't I?
Yeah. That'd be a good one.
Maybe we could have a spin-off podcast, Retro Asylum Nights or something, where Mads talks about his questionable.
Not safe for work.
Questionable interests. But yeah, New Zealand Story is a great game, but I'd love to have a dedicated high score challenge month, and I'm not sure New Zealand Story would give us that.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Well, that's it then, guys.
That's it. Any shout-outs?
Dean?
Clint Humphreys. I should have mentioned him a while back. He helped me out with the Pyrex, getting it up and running, first of all. And, yeah, so thank you, Clint. He's one of our listeners and Patreons. Good guy. Comes to McDonald's with us whenever we go to a retro event. So.
And he buys you a Big Mac, doesn't he?
He does every time.
Mads?
Steve and Matt. I'm really looking forward to doing this episode, actually, where we're going to be four on a Game Club episode. So Steve is going to be joining us as well.
Yeah, that
should
be fun.
That'd be great fun. So, yeah, that's it for me.
Yeah, ditto that. I just want to shout out as well, new podcast I've been listening to, the Retrospectives podcast, which is a Game Club style podcast run by a couple of Australian guys, James and Patrick. Really good guys. Check that out, Retrospectives. It's been going for about 15 months now, so there's a really good backlog of episodes. And they actually approached us about doing a crossover Game Club, Retro Silent Game Club Retrospectives podcast, and choosing a common game, maybe one that we could split into two parts and have one going out under our feed and one under theirs. So we're still exploring that. But we can announce that that will happen. It will probably just be me because Mads, obviously, time permitting is difficult. We are going to be looking at the first Fallout game, which is coming up in a couple of months. And yeah, so watch out for that. I'll be talking more about which feed that will go out on. So if you want to play along with us, there'll be chat, I'm sure, in both of our respective Discords, and we're hoping to get that episode out at some point in May.
There you go.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, guys, we'll be back end of April. This poll will go up when the episode goes live, hopefully very shortly. And, get practicing your Arkanoid, spinning your spinners, because that's what we're going to be playing. Hopefully.
It's not. It's Zookeeper. Zookeeper! As you're told.
There we go. Yeah, the grandfather
treat
speaks.
Yourselves. That's it. Treat and yourselves to Zookeeper.
On that note, it's bye-bye for now.
Yes. Goodbye, everyone.
Take care. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
From now on, unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures in a